Have Your Say 3, Chapter 6, Track 66, Listening 1, Note-Taking.
Sarah Corbett leads the Craftivist Collective, a small group of people who use their original and inspiring art to challenge people's views of the world. She explains how voicing your opinion through creativity can make your voice stronger and your compassion deeper. Listen to the lecture A Craftivist Story for the first time and use the organizational cue Sarah gives in the introduction. Today, I want to talk to you about three problems I've found to create a framework for your notes. Decide which note-taking style you want to use, either the mind-mapping style or the listing style, and leave spaces after each main idea so you can add more information later. Listen for speaker emphasis as described in the listening strategy to help you find main ideas and key information to write in your notes. When you're finished, compare your notes with those of a classmate by asking each other questions regarding main ideas and information you missed, and add to your notes.
So today I want to talk to you about three problems I found with the activism world and the reality of it today, but also a tool that I found that helped me to become a happy and healthy craftivist. So for the Southerners in the room, that's craftivist. So you might be thinking, what is craftivism? Well, it was coined by a lovely lady called Betsy Greer in 2003, and she defined it as, my memory's really bad, a way of looking at life where voicing opinions through creativity makes your voice stronger, your compassion deeper, and your quest for justice more infinite. And because I felt like a burnt-out activist and didn't feel like I fitted into that way of doing traditional activism, and I loved craft, I thought, like I always think, if I've got a passion and a talent for something, how can I use it for good? So I Googled craft and activism, and that term popped up, and I thought, brilliant. So I contacted Betsy and said, this is amazing, I love it, I love what you're saying that it is. Are there any groups I can join? Are there any projects I can do? And she contacted me back saying, no, my website's all about documenting how craft has been used in history with the suffragettes and Chilean women and what's been going on throughout history and what's happening now, but we don't provide that tool. So I thought, well, all right, I'm going to do something and check if she thinks it's happy to be called craftivism. So I started doing lots of projects, and it felt like craft and activism for me really fitted well together. And one of the first things that really drained me of energy as an activist was that I felt like I was doing loads all the time. You know, as a campaigner, you always get told, great, you want a campaign, join this group, go on this march, sign this petition, go do this, do. And because the world, sadly, is quite messed up, there's always loads to do. And I did loads, and I got completely knackered and didn't feel like I was achieving much. But with craft is naturally slow. So for me, it made me slow down. It made me focus on what I was doing. And with craft, with hand embroidery, like cross stitch and different stitches, it's very repetitive and you're using your hands. So it naturally helps you reflect on things and it helps you meditate because it is very repetitive. So when I linked that in with thinking about justice issues and stitching about justice issues, it made me think for hours and it really helped me focus in this busy world that we're in now to really think about those issues and think about what they mean to me, how I feel like I could make any difference as a voter, as a consumer, as a constituent, as a campaigner, as a friend, as a colleague. You know, how can I help these enormous issues that are happening? How can I be part of the solution rather than part of the problem? And for me, I felt like craft was the only thing that really forced me to stop and think, and I didn't feel like the activism world really offered that to me. So the fact that craft makes you stop and think and reflect, and it uses your hands, your head, and your heart, and when you link that in with justice issues, for me, it just clicked, and I thought, brilliant, I like this. The second thing for me was that I always felt like as a campaigner, our default was always to be really negative. It was always to preach at people and say, we're right, you're wrong, you should do this, I'm going to shout at you until you do that, I'm going to bully you, I'm going to demonize you. And for me, like lots of people, that's really draining. You know, if you're always thinking about the negatives and not striving for the positives, it's quite uncomfortable to do. And as a typical campaigner, I was contacting my MP on email, saying, you know, signing these petitions and sending them to her. And she got back to me, actually, and told me to stop. And she said, yeah, I know. She said, I want you to stop campaigning. This is a waste of your time, my time, and charity's money. And I thought, what? You're not a very good MP for telling me to do that. But actually, it was really good because she made me think, actually, I'm not talking to her, I'm talking at her. I'm just telling her what to do. I'm treating her like a robot, a bit like how I felt as an activist. I was new to the area. I didn't know much about what she was all about and what her passions were. And she didn't know much about me, so she didn't know that all these campaigns I was doing quick and easy clicktivism and slacktivism for, I actually really cared about them. So I decided to make her a handkerchief, as you do. And here's a copy of it that I use in workshops, because she's got the real one, which is up there. So I stitched on the handkerchief, Dear my MP, which is her name, but I'm not going to tell you who she is. As my MP, I'm asking you to please use your powerful position to challenge injustice, change structures keeping people poor, and fight for a more just and fair world. I know being an MP is a big and tough job, but please don't blow it. This is your chance to start to make a real positive difference. Yours in hope, Sarah. And then I had my postcode, so she knew I was a constituent. So I booked in to meet her, and she had to meet me, and I gave her this hanky, and I said, I'm the one who's been sending you all these campaign issues, and I want to tell you about what I'm passionate about and how all of the campaigns I'm sending you fit under this umbrella of social justice and inequality that I'm passionate about. But I also want to know what you're passionate about and how I can be the best constituent and how I can challenge you to be the best MP and keep you on the right track, and we can sort of work together where possible and be critical friends to each other where possible as well. And when I contact her now, I always refer to my MP, to my handkerchief in all correspondence to her, and she does the same, and we know each other, and we, because I gave her this crafty thing that's quite messy on the back and that clearly took me a long time, it helped me build a relationship with her, which as a traditional activist, I never really got a chance to build that connection and to know a lot about. She's very honest with me now about what she can and can't do, and it's really useful information as a campaigner, so you can be much more strategic in what you do. And all of our projects are very positive, so we always start from how the world is a beautiful place and look at this amazing event that's happening, but we can make it better, and there's also some crap stuff going on as well. So we always start from that position, and we do everything small. So again, it's not attacking people, it's not preaching at people, it's not a giant banner that people have to avoid to go past you. You don't have a giant megaphone in your hand so people just, you know, don't want to listen to you and just switch off. It's always provoking people to think, it doesn't tell people what to do, and it's always very positive and encouraging and trying to get people to be their best selves. The third thing that I struggled with traditional forms of activism was, I hinted at the beginning, was I really didn't feel like I fitted in as an activist. I'm not a natural extrovert, hence the nervous laughter. and I don't always like being around a lot of people. I quite like doing stuff on my own. I actually get really drained from being around large groups in big parties. I like to think quite deeply on my own or be around people. I don't like dressing up. I don't like shouting. I'm scared of riding a bike, so lots of some activists don't like me there. I'm not a vegan. I love fashion. There was lots of reasons I didn't feel like I fitted in to the activism world. So for me, I want activism to thread through my whole life. I don't want it just to be something I opt into once in a while to say, oh, well done me, I've done my bit for the world and buff up my halo. I want it to be in everything I do, whether I smile to people on the street, what I buy, you know, who I vote for. It should be, we should all be, everything we do should be about trying to make the world a better place and not harming it as well, which is easy to do. So what we do is we do stuff where we craft on our own, on buses, in public, and with craft, people naturally want to ask you what you're doing. You're not stitching there saying to people, do you want to ask me what I'm doing? You stitch, you reflect on it, and people tend to really want to go up to you and go, "Oh, what are you doing?" And then if you say, "I'm stitching a handkerchief for a journalist who I think has got loads of power, but they're abusing it a little bit," or a banker of my friend, my mum's friend, or, you know, a teacher who's got loads of power with their local kids to help them be the best global citizens they could be, it starts a conversation. You know, if you're stitching a mini protest banner like our little ones we hang up, which is a quote from Gandhi or, you know, Scorsese or anyone, it causes a conversation and people feel like they've approached you, so they're much more open to have a chat with you rather than you forcing it down their throat. We also do events in public. We tend to always have it as small groups of people, again, so it's always something that we chat to each other whilst doing things. Half the time we don't even talk to each other, we're just focusing on what we're doing, but people naturally come to us. People will Instagram what we're doing, Pinterest it, tweet about it. It means for us that activism isn't in this bubble that you have to fit into anymore. It's part of everyday life, and it's getting people to think on their own and take ownership of issues. And we do big events as well. So this one is in the Haywood, when the Haywood asked us to do an event with, as part of the Tracy Emin quilt exhibition. And we were told to do something that linked in with that. So we had a giant love letter talking about her exhibition was about love and very much about her love for individuals and individual love and quite self-centered. So we focused on global love and what it means to show your love and got people stitching about that. And we crammed in, 70 people came and wouldn't leave. And it was the biggest event they'd had in that area. And people were tweeting like weeks beforehand saying, "I'm going to the Tracy Emin exhibition because I love craft. So I'm going to go see her quilts. But I'm definitely going on this day because I want to do the thing with the craftivists as well." So we got a lot of buzz around it. And again, we really want activism to be outside of the activist bubble. So we get loads of slack from a lot of activists, sadly, who say, "Why aren't you at Occupy?" or "Why don't you come along to this, you know, feminist meeting or this zine fest?" And there's not enough time in the world, so we really focus on being places where you might not normally find it. So we work a lot with different organizations like the Tate and art institutions, as well as craft institutions. We got 5,000 people as part of Secret Cinema to stitch as prisoners, thinking about injustice issues, thinking about how the crime that they'd committed, how to reflect on that, to exercise that inner monologue, which often, if you don't, can mean that people get very violent or end up self-harming because they're overwhelmed by things. So really got people thinking about the justice system and thinking about how craft can help with mental health as well, and like taking down those labels of what prisoners are and really getting people to be in the shoes of prisoners and think quite hard while they were stitching. And working with like jewelry companies like Tatty Divine, every Valentine's Day we do a project with them where they design our little key rings that everyone makes and puts them in letters and leaves around the world. And they've got such a cult following of fashionistas and people who love their fashion. To be able to link in with that audience, again, for us, that's really powerful that we can get activism and justice issues into the everyday life. For me, activism saved me. I felt completely lost as an activist and felt like my reality had just disappeared and I didn't know what to do. So craftivism really saved me. It helped me reflect on issues so that I took ownership of them. And so I had a strong foundation to know what to do. It helped me engage people in a conversational, respectful way so we could be critical friends with each other, but really try and make the world a better place using each other's gifts and talents and challenging each other. And it also meant that I didn't have to go and opt into being an activist for some of my life and feel completely drained. I could be a craftivist. So for me, my story really is for you to think about the reality now. Are you an activist in that mold? Do you feel like you don't fit in? Does activism need to change in the reality that we're in today? And how do you think you can be the person that you are? Thank you very much.